It's showtime.
Cade. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Yes, and a new broadcast week begins on the horn. It is Monday, the 16th day of April, 2018. Headon.live is where we live, and that's where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room. I'm trying to right now. It's just I'm not having a lot of luck. But at any rate, you'll be greeted and met by the likes of Anatole and Mr. Willowy and VT Blom and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky. And I don't know why I'm not in there, but oh well, I will be if the technology permits. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes, the middle of the month of April has arrived, and we have thanks to send out for this Monday evening. Thanks to our subscribers. Thank you very kindly to Reinhardt in Virginia. Thanks very kindly indeed to Timothy in Arizona. Thank you. Very much indeed to Glenn in upstate New York, far upstate New York. Yeah, and thanks go out as well, since it was a weekend. We got a long list of thank yous. Thanks to James in Spain. The James in Spain stays mainly in the plane. You know, sooner or later I was going to have to do that. But, yeah. So, thank you, James. That was just irresistible. Thanks to Tim. Timothy, thank you very kindly. And thank you very much to Darlene in Connecticut. Yes. Thank you to Robert in California. And thank you to our good friends at Eastern States. Thank you. Let's see here, and let's, yeah, that was, and just a second, two more subscribers. Thank you very kindly to Joseph, and thank you very much indeed to Matt in San Francisco. That is all very, very helpful indeed. And so, with that being the case, we've got another week of fundraising to go. And I'm trying for the life of me to figure out. Well, it says I'm in the chat room. I got nothing. Anyway, well, at least I can watch it. Who knows? Who knows? Let's get going, shall we? Now that the thank yous are out, we've got $200 to raise this evening. The usual on any given evening. I can happily state that the White Rose Society, what we should be sending to the White Rose Society streamer, Ben worked all weekend long on rebuilding that thing, and I show the program going out, but I'm just getting a note from Jack in Shreveport saying, head on dot live okay, White Rose not on yet, However, HeadOn.live is requiring a secure connection now, HTTPS rather than just HTTP, or it won't connect. It did not the last time I used it. Maybe the secure connection is causing a problem with the chat room? I got nothing. I'm completely bumfuzzled by the whole thing. So, you know, it just is what it is. I mean, Okay, all right, that helped. That helped some. And, yeah. Strange. Now I'm in the chat room, and who knows? Well, at least we know the... at least we know the HeadOn.live stream is running, and I can tell Ben that something is sideways with the White Rose stream. Oh well, but anyway, we've got a nice little group forming up in the chat room, and you're welcome to jump right in. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password. Boom, you'll be right there. Steve from Georgia stands wandered in. Foam cups has popped by. All kinds of fun little yep. And, you know, more to come because we don't have a tardy bell here or anything. But it's Moran Monday on the horn. Oh, yes, it is. And, it kind of goes without saying that, either Michael Cohen or someone related to the, not by blood, who knows, someone related to the Michael Cohen mess will find their way into Moran Monday. Yes. I think you're absolutely right. Stephen, New York, pointing out subject line chat room. Clearly, you need to update your Dispense Popple and probably get the new software update for your Flagellate. Mm-hmm. And barring that, we may need an entirely new Knuton valve. Absolutely. Yeah. But nonetheless, I'm here. Oh, program announcement. Yeah, I was about to forget that. Yeah, this is a two-hour program this evening because I got a call from the last little low knee hills of the North Georgia mountains, and Mike Malloy, our dear friend, is under the weather this evening, and so I'll be filling in there from 9 to 11, and hopefully you'll join in on that too, and we'll have a lovely, magnificent, grand, fun time around the Malloy campfire beginning at 9 p.m. 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. It was a nice and a relaxing weekend here. Had a lovely day Saturday, and then yesterday the gray skies blew in, and the remnants of whatever it was that knocked the living bejesus out of the upper Midwest this weekend. We caught some of that, too. I made a run up to the Wiggling Pig earlier today and found myself walking through a snow squall just to get back to the car. Snow on the 16th of April. I'm running out of curse words. I really, really am. Got a toasty 60 degrees going on here in the studio, and I'm not going to complain about the weather because then somebody will write me a nasty email from Michigan or Minnesota or Wisconsin or something like that and tell me to just shut up. Because they got whacked. That was ugly. And of course, I was trying to think back. It was May of 1991. I remember it well that it snowed here in West Virginia. It didn't much. I mean, it stuck. You know, not quite, but maybe a half an inch or so. But it's been known to happen, and this may be this may be one of those years. Oh, well. But yeah, so what? Yeah, weather. Weather schmether. But like I said, it's Moran Monday, and we've got... It's kind of neck and neck between Michael Cohen and James Comey, for me at least. Maybe you do. I don't. Okay, and Sean Hannity, but that's kind of tied to the Michael Cohen thing. But am I the only one who... Because, see, I have to be a little bit consistent. Um, or at least try. Because I can remember back when Comey was testifying and he used that "Lordy, I hope so" line, and I remember seeing that clip and just thinking, this guy's a little bit of a Lulu. And he kind of proved it if you bothered to sit down and watch the George Snuffleupagus interview. He did. And it, were you impressed? Because I wasn't. And I got to thinking that his is a mighty thin reed upon which to pin our hopes for some sort of relief from this this constantly unfolding trick box of political and civil horrors and disasters that is, you know, the regime of Trump the Magnificent. Yes, I agree. Thank you. Getting a little love in the chat room there. Labor man pointing out Comey's a Jagoff. Good. Thank you. So, because he's trying very hard. Comey is to come across as some put upon maybe martyr. But it's no soap with me. Okay, so I'm seeing in the chat room, Steve from Georgia Stan, Comey's whiny too. Oh, welcome to the chat room, Silent R. Lamar. Yay. Good to see you. But there's just something that doesn't wash there. And I guess in the final analysis, it's this. Whatever you say about whatever choices, whatever decisions that he made, the fact is, at the time that he was ginning up the news cycle over, but her emails, he also knew that the Trump campaign was under investigation for something that probably exceeded playing footsie, you know, with the Russians. Whether you call it conspiracy, collusion, footsie, tiddlywinks, in flagrante delicto, I don't care. He knew that both campaigns were under investigation, and he wrung the bloody shirt up the flagpole over Hillary's email. And forever and anon, there's nothing you can do, nothing any of us can do, nothing history can do, but question that decision. And his facile explanation of, oh, well, you know, I was just pretty sure. Lordy, I thought Hillary was going to win, so it'd be okay if I jumped on that bandwagon of everybody else screaming about her bullshit emails that didn't amount to any hill of beans in the first place. Lordy! So, your opinion is your own, and the facts are what the facts are. It's just that it's a little difficult to get your head around the facts, but with all the self-serving bullshit being served up, around it. It's the self-serving bullshit is like, well, no, let's not ruin anybody's dinner, but you get the idea. But out of that whole exchange with George Snuffleupagus, there was the exchange in which they talked about, you know, once it became clear that Comey was going to say what ABC was really interested in, and that is that he was going to say unkind, critical things about Donald Trump, things that, you know, the first grader should probably be able to realize at this point. I mean, that was the whole point of this exercise, was to give Comey a chance to come out, sell his book, and then talk smack on Geezer Disgustus, which is really, and I mean, I admit it, and we do it here, swinging at the low-hanging fruit. Or plucking it, or something. Flavio, for instance, by email, says, yes, he's a put-upon paragon of virtue. Flavio adds, blech. I'll second your blech and see you at Yule. Mm-hmm. But then there was the passage where he said the question of impeachment arose. And I guess I shouldn't be surprised, coming from the my goodness lordy no guy, that he would come up with some sort of bizarre response to that. And in his words, this is a direct quote, impeachment lets the American people off the hook. Which is really a bizarre way to try to discourage impeachment. Especially when somebody is impeachable. And let's remember, now that the standard has been sufficiently lowered, impeachable is just about anything Congress wants it to be, ever since they declared impeachable equaled lying about oral sex. Okay? I mean, that's where we are. That's where the Republican Party took us in the 1990s. Oop, I said took us. But that's the standard. They establish it, they have to live with it. So if lying about oral sex is impeachable, then lying about a multiple occasioned consensual, just like the oral sex was, extramarital adulterous affair kind of falls in the same ballpark, doesn't it? I mean, granted, it doesn't come with the knuckle wagging and the, I did not have sex with that woman, Ms. Lewinsky. We haven't gotten, no, because he's, frankly, Donald Trump is not that erudite. I mean, we're talking about a guy with a third grade vocabulary. The most you're ever going to get in the way of a denial of having had sex with, oh, I don't know, Stormy Daniels, or the playmate whose name I can't remember, or the help, is nuh-uh. And some weird series of clicks and grunts transmitted over Twitter somewhere, sometime. But this idea that the former director of the FBI, who did so much to screw up the situation that turned into a monumentally more screwed up situation, the idea that he feels comfortable saying that impeachment lets the American people off the hook, well, that's just bullshit. Not trying to wear the word out, but it is. Because impeachment is the means by which the American people, putting pressure upon their elected representatives, can bring redress to a situation in which those elected representatives have heretofore failed and or refused to act. We've got a madman in the White House, but according to James Comey, he just wants to let him stay there until the American people, hopefully, I ain't betting on it, vote him out of office in November of 2020. I've run into some people, no way he gets reelected, Bob. No way, man. I'm like, you don't know the American people so well, maybe. You will never go broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people. Yes, we've got Trump because it was because of a failure. Well, because of a constitutional crisis. We've got Trump because of the failure of the Electoral College system. And make no mistake, it failed. We're not doing a good enough job of talking about the fact that it failed and that it has failed twice in the space of less than 20 years. We've got him because of that. But we've also got him because, frankly, a lot of people bought into the snake oil. They loved the fact that he stood there on a stage with 16 other schmucks and berated and bullied and harangued them into submission. So, you're more than welcome to your own opinion. I mean, but this idea that impeachment lets the, I don't even know what that means. Impeachment lets the American people off the hook. I mean, why not respond to, if you're going to respond that way, Comey, why not respond, you know, with something that is at least creatively, classically recognizable, like oblah-dee, oblah-da, or cuckoo-ca-choo. Because it's equally senseless, lets the American people off the hook. That makes it sound like impeachment is some sort of a way of obviating necessary blame placing. Yes, you're absolutely right, Silent R. Lamar. Republicans do believe, do as I say and not as I do. But this isn't about blame. The impeachment is there for a deadly serious purpose when you've got a president who is out of hand and is committing high and or has committed high crimes and misdemeanors. Then it is incumbent upon the body to act. Now, there's no shall language in the Constitution. It's all may. But it's all predicated on the idea that they will know. They will know a threat to the Republic when they see one. A note coming in from Lee in New York City, subject line impeachment. From Gerald Ford.
An impeachable offense is whatever a majority of the House of Representatives considers it to be at a given moment in history.
It's the terrible Gerald Ford impression. Right now, says Lee, an impeachable offense is only one which the majority of Republican voters will support. Until the Republican voters stop supporting Trump, the elected congressional Republicans will continue to support Trump. Impeachment will not happen. Conviction is even harder to see as possible. I understand all that, Lee, but it doesn't change the operating philosophy of what the framers saw it as. And let's do remember that the Republicans are notorious constitutional originalists, just like fat dead Tony Scalia taught them to be. And what they thought and what they wanted is supposed to matter, except where Republicans are concerned, you know, being hypocrites, until it doesn't. Until they decide otherwise. Until they decide that, well, by God, lying about oral sex is impeachable as hell, but Well, you know, if there's full-on sweaty coitus and spanking with a copy of Forbes magazine, what, that puts that out of the realm of congressional jurisdiction? I probably shouldn't talk about Donald Trump's adulterous affairs and use the term jurisdiction in the same sentence. But you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Lets the American people off the hook. So are the American people still on the hook if they reelect Donald Trump in 2020, according to this the 6 foot 8 inch tall goofball? How do the American people get off the hook that he says they're on? Well, you kind of got me on that. But there's a ton of stuff that extend beyond all of this today. It was, after all, hearing day, and a certain federal court in New York City and there was a supposedly shocking revelation. Okay, then this, coming from Renee in D.C. You'd think the GOP would impeach, unless the GOP had some sort of come to consensual PP moment, then all's forgiven and forget impeachment, especially if it involves, you know, Russian prostitutes. Mm-hmm. I know. And with what happened in federal court today, you wouldn't be completely out there if you just wondered what the hell it was about. Early in the morning, earlier today, when the lawyers showed up, they said that under compulsion from the federal judge, they told Her Honor that. Michael Cohen has three clients. And in open court, they named Donald J. Trump and the Broidy guy that we talked about on Friday, who got a playmate pregnant and then paid her $1.3 million. And, well, Michael there negotiated the payout. But there was one unnamed client, a third client. And what was interesting is that, as I've indicated in the past week or so, the Trump Organization, quote unquote, was not named as a client. Now, does that mean that he doesn't do any work for the Trump Organization? Or does that mean that there is no appreciable difference between Donald Trump and the Trump Organization? L'état, c'est moi, and all of that. Don't know. So then proceedings continued until this afternoon, at which point in time the United States Federal District Judge looked at Michael Cohen's lawyers and said, okay, who's the third guy? Who's the third client? And the lawyer, do we really gotta? Yeah, you really gotta. Oh, okay, if we gotta. Sean Hannity. At which point it was all stop. No, really. The life support system for a haircut is the third client of Michael Cohen? Why, yes, as a matter of fact, he is, or was. apparently the Hannity job was not ready for the revelation. Nobody had, from the way he behaved, nobody had woodshedded him or given him a warning or It's being reported now that when Hannity's name was mentioned, that there was an audible gasp. It was Cohen's attorney Stephen Ryan who said, "Your Honor, the third client, Sean Hannity." Occasioning one of those classic movie scenes in which reporters jump up and run out the doors to head off to the Western Union and telegraph their stories to the home. Well, no, but effectively the same thing. Apparently, the representation was in possibly was 2017 and possibly this year as well. And of course, there are photo. There's at least one photo out there of Hannity and Cohen standing together, smiling like a pair of foxes eating shit out of a wire brush. But Hannity was unprepared, and it took him a while to try to figure out what it was he was going to say about it. And eventually, in his radio program, what you got was this. "Michael never represented me in any matter. I never retained him in the traditional sense. I never received an invoice from Michael." Then he went on to say that, well, yeah, he'd asked him legal questions over the years and stuff. We definitely had attorney-client privilege because I asked him for that. But I never used Michael for any case that involved me and a third party. Ever. You know what that means, right? Because with the announcement of Sean Hannity and giving some, given some of the foregoing and some allegations about Hannity and his behavior over at that sexual harassment cesspit, otherwise known as Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, it was, well, you know, I wonder who Michael Cohen facilitated the payoff for in this case. And hence Hannity declaring, I never used Michael for any case that involved me and a third party ever. Which is an interesting way to put that. Could it have been someone else in a third party? Or is there simply no third party? This is one of those whole words mean things kind of conundrums. So that's gonna suck all the oxygen right out of the room. For the remainder, well, for the next, you know, at least 24 hours until the next sleazy, skeevy, slimy thing happens that involves the Trump regime. And you can be guaranteed that there is one. But Well, quite frankly, one of the funniest things to be said about it is Sean Hannity is the hidden love child. Based on last week's skeevy revelation that Donald J. Trump stooped the help and got her pregnant and that, well, yeah, somewhere out there there's a little Trump. But I think the Hannity job's too old for that. So, The question is, why was it necessary? And maybe this is unfair. But why was it necessary for that to remain secret? Because, among other things, you just think of it this way. Well, think about Friday on the front porch. Now, Billable Rick is here most every Friday, and Steve from New York, also a lawyer, chimes in fairly frequently. They do not deliver legal advice to anyone individually. They offer commentary based upon their knowledge and their skills, their expertise, their experience. And there have been lots of lawyers on the Hannity Job Program. So having him as, like, your back-channel legal go-to guy, why would that need to be secret? Doesn't seem like it would be, does it? No. So, you know, I guess it's another one of those watch this space moments when we wait to find out what it was that didn't involve Sean Hannity and a third party, but because of the language used, could have involved somebody else and a third party. Well, when we find out what that was. And of course, remember, you wouldn't retain Michael Cohen as your divorce lawyer. You probably wouldn't retain Michael Cohen to do you a title search and write you a deed, because you'd probably wind up with an invalid title. I mean, he doesn't. All he is, as far as we can tell, is a fixer. And a writer of nasty grams, and a guy who will try to bully reporters into not reporting on, you know, his boss's skeevy antics. You wouldn't hire him to write a will, because the thing would wind up more fucked up than Jarndyce versus Jarndyce in Bleak House. And, you know, technically, a divorce would involve a third party. A transfer of ownership of real property would involve a third party. Then there's the question of third party. If you start thinking in legalistic terms, for instance, take a deed in which the party of the first part, the owner of the property, conveys unto the party of the second part, the conveyee. Well, those are the two parties. The lawyer is not a party. It's a two-party transaction. So why are we suddenly stopped? What does Hannity mean when he says there was no third party ever? I mean, arguably, in the relationship, disgusting as it is to ponder, between Stormy Daniels and Donald Trump, that's a two-party transaction. Now, maybe Michael Cohen becomes a third party by virtue now of his questionable activities therein. But But third party is well, to use a word that was tweeted this weekend by Geezer Disgustus, slippery. And you'll forgive me if I'm just a little bit skeptical and curious about that particular language. Because the rats are heading for the lifeboats on this leaky ship of state. And they can all hear the baying hounds of the various and sundry law enforcement agencies out on a moonlight ridge seeking their scent. Make no mistake, Hannity is freaking the f*** out. And it remains to be seen why. I guess Bloomberg was one of the first to get the information out. AP was pretty quick, too. The Hannity job had specifically requested, again, not to let his name become public. And in point of fact, the pettifogger representing Cohen, Stephen Ryan, went so far as to hand her Hannity's name in a sealed envelope. And threatened an appeal if either he or Cohen released the name out loud. So maybe you're not. I mean, Art Bell died on Friday the 13th. Okay. And he made a career out of paranoid conspiracies. This is and. You know, in many ways, there's a line that runs from Art Bell up to Alex Jones. But I don't want us going down into that muck. But you can't help but be a little bit curious. I mean, professional reputation, really? He works at Fox News, please. Now, remember, Keith Olbermann got thrown under the bus, and then the bus went into reverse and ran over him again over a little itsy-bitsy, teeny-tiny little pissant political contribution at the same time that certain people who were Republicans at MSNBC at the time, were also making political contributions and didn't do time or get canned. Even though Olbermann's ratings were considerably better than some Republicans. But at the time, it was pointed out that similar things had happened over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda with absolutely no repercussions whatsoever. So that line of theory is out. And I guess all we can do is all we can do is wonder. Meanwhile, Jim, with a note regarding Comey, no impeachment on the way. That SOB FBI not wanting to be political started the shit with Hillary's emails and pisses and moans on TV. Fuck him. Hoo-ah. I added the hoo-ah. But yeah, that's not lost on me. No. Meanwhile, Steve in New York, subject line, why is Hannity going nutsy Fagan? Because the fact that he and Trump had the same lawyer, and I suspect they were probably coordinating their messaging. We thought Trump was getting stuff off of Hannity when it may actually have been the other way around, or they were coordinating the entire broadcast together through Cohen. Finally, as I recall, Hannity had a veterans charity. I would not be surprised if they were laundering money through there. Yeah, there was some stench around that charity, wasn't there? Yeah, there was. Meanwhile, some of those conservatives who are now our dearest friends are manifesting their shock, I tell you, shock about the Hannity revelation. Enter Charlie Sykes, a conservative with principles. Yeah, I thought about that too. Darlene with a note, the slippery reference. Trump was referring to Comey when he said slippery. If he had used the phrase slippery eel, I would have shit my pants, because that would have been too coincidental to what I wrote you last week about Comey being a slippery eel, meaning someone from his camp is listening to your show. He's too stupid to come up with that on his own. Well, I hi, y'all. Oh, my dear. That's just too creepy to, I can't. Hi, Agent Fred. Maybe it's just Agent Fred. Maybe he calls the gyms and sends them up to the, I don't know. But yeah, I did. I remembered you using that. That's how come slippery stayed in my, that's odd. Hey, Darlene. Maybe it's your email they're watching. No. Oh, I don't even want to think about that. I know. But no, a principled conservative, Charlie Sykes, showed up on MSNBC and delivered a bit of a jeremiad against Sean Hannity and Fox, and I'm sure there was much giggling going on. Just, you know, a few feet off mic over there in the studios.
I want to bring Charlie Sykes in. He's an MSNBC contributor and a conservative radio host. Charlie, what do you make of this?
Well, Lordy, I hope there are tapes. I mean, how extraordinary is it? Look, Sean Hannity had no legal obligation to disclose his relationship with Michael Cohen. But if there is anything remaining of journalistic ethics over at Fox News, he certainly needed to disclose that fact when he was going on and on and on talking about Michael Cohen, the raid on Michael Cohen, and this entire, you know, legal proceeding here. And I guess, you know, in your previous discussion, the question is, you know, are there any standards any longer? We've talked a lot about being in a post-factual political world.
We are talking about Fox still, aren't we? And somebody's out there asking if there are standards. Okay.
You kind of want whether over there you're in a post-ethical political world as well.
Because Eric Deggans makes a point that...
time out. And Ali Bell, she does a pretty good job, I have to say. But now, time out. We're talking about a TV network whose principles from... Bill O'Reilly to Roger Ailes were running their own little private sleaze emporium
in which they felt like their money and their position and their power entitled them to do just about anything they wanted to relative to a woman's body. Remember the story of Roger Ailes watching the woman on the trampoline at the Fox picnic party and saying, "I sure hope you don't have any panties on." Yeah. And then the whole, you know, "baby, I'd like to scrub you with falafel" from... Yeah, it still kills me. It just busts me up every time. "Oh, baby, I'd rub you down with falafel. Oh, I did like it, too." But I guess, you know, I guess that's what you talk about. And I bet there are a lot of days when it's been real fun for Michael Cohen to be Michael Cohen, going around shoving people and saying mean things to them and things like, you know, "I'm going to fuck you and it's going to be fucking disgusting what I'm going to do to you," and just sort of basking in that glory of being a wartime consigliere, that he is the modern living embodiment of Tom Hagen from The Godfather. But I'm guessing it's not so much fun anymore. So we won't wear that down to a nub, but it is funny that the mooch, Anthony Scaramucci, jumped up on the cross and started hammering away earlier today. He was booked on the Fox News morning program before the shit hit the fan to complain about Comey comparing Donald Trump to a mob boss. Comey had said, I don't do it lightly, Lordy. Lordy, and I'm not trying to lordy, by the way, lordy, suggest that President Trump is lordy, outbreaking legs, and lordy, you know, shaking down shopkeepers. But instead, what I'm talking about is that leadership culture constantly comes back to me, lordy, when I think about my experience with the Trump administration, lordy. The lordy, the loyalty oath, lordy, the boss as the dominant center of everything, lordy, it's all about how do you serve the boss, lordy, what's in the boss's interests, lordy. I added all the lordies, but everything else is a direct quote from Comey. Well, this did not sit well with DeMooch, who has declared that, at a question from Brian Kilmeade, in other words, it was a big setup, "Are you insulted by that?" To which DeMooch responded, "Listen, here's the problem for Italian Americans. I can be insulted by that, but I really can't do anything about it because for whatever reason, it's still an unprotected class of people where they can say whatever they want about you." The only thing is, Comey didn't say anything about Italians. And DeMooch, apparently, in leaping up on the cross, forgot that there are all kinds of mobs in this country. I mean, it wasn't that long ago at all that the Tangerine Tiberius was fulminating mightily about MS-19 or 13 or 6 7/8 or whatever the fuck it is. And, you know, there's Mexican mobs and there's Italian mobs and Russian mobs. Well, I mean, yeah. There were Jewish mobs, Irish mobs, dead rabbits, anybody? And they sort of all have their own natural evolution. groups within, and it's quite often immigrant groups, who brutalize their own communities in order to consolidate power in themselves. But there was nothing said about Italians. He just said, yeah, classic mob boss. Thank you, Arthur. Ooh, Lordy, Bob's gone all Lordy. Hey, Mooch. Forget about it. But no, Mooch is concerned now that there's going to be some sort of pogrom against Italian Americans, I guess. I don't know. I'm in the White House. They're saying I'm a walking pinky ring. Imagine if I was another ethnic group. They couldn't say that, right? But it just speaks to Comey's sanctimony and lack of awareness in terms of his language and lack of awareness of who he is as a guy. You know, they call him Cardinal Comey for a reason. He thinks he's got the answers. He thinks he's at that papal throne, and he's the one that's going to make these decisions. Whew, I guess you get what you pay for. I mean, that guy's every bit as goofy as he was for the 10 days that he was White House Communications Director. Anything to sort of try to distract, to divert attention from the reality. And the reality is, and this one's a funny little bit of Goddess of Irony work, the reality is, long before mob boss long before that was mentioned by Comey or anybody else, well, there was Michael Cohen. And oddly enough, Scaramucci wasn't up on the cross about this, but it was 2011 when Michael Cohen talked to ABC News. Yeah? Let's check in with the time machine.
And right-hand man for Donald Trump, who had the meeting with Rick Perry yesterday. And Michael, the big question I got on Twitter, a lot of people want to know, what is Donald Trump up to? Is he running? Is he not running? Is he going to play kingmaker? Is he going to endorse? What is the Trump game plan when it comes to 2012?
Well, first of all, hi, Rick. Hi, Amy. How are you? Good to see you again. Donald Trump is definitely a playmaker. I actually used a statement yesterday. He is now the godfather of politics. Everybody wants to see him. Everybody wants his endorsement. And at the end of the day, we're not 100% sure what his future is going to be.
Yeah, that's Michael Collins. Wrong insurgent. That's Michael Cohen calling Donald Trump the godfather of politics. That apparently was offered up, I don't know, as praise, so therefore the Mooch isn't quite so offended by it. Is that how all this works? I can't hardly keep up anymore. So that's the filibobster for this evening. I will remember, I remember, hopefully you do too. I will remind us all, we try to raise $200 every evening. You know, just so, you know, so maybe somebody can tell Donald Trump to call Comey slippery. We try to raise $200 every evening. We are at present at zero. So, that being the case, if that was remedied in the next 4 or 5 minutes,
during the break, I wouldn't have to mention it again. And remember, this is only a two-hour show this evening. Now, it's not going to be that way all week, just this evening, because Mike's under the weather. This is a two-hour show this evening, so we'll do some conversation in the second hour. If you guys want to get involved, you're more than welcome to. You know the number, 304-574-8178, or toll-free, 844-843-4676. That's 844-THE-HORN. And then Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn. Okie-doke, okie-doke. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid. And, of course, the PayPal button is over at headon.live.
A bottle of white, a bottle of red, perhaps a bottle of rosé instead. Get a table near the street, in our old familiar place, you and I, face to face. Mm-hmm. A bottle of red, a bottle of white, it all depends upon your appetite. I'll meet you anytime you want, in our Italian red. Too lazy, and Eddie could never afford.
All depends upon your appetite. Yes, indeed. I had an appetite for ribs yesterday. It was so gray and miserable after a couple of lovely days. I decided to redeem the day by putting some ribs on the smoker. And I tell you what, I did things a little bit differently this time through. And man, were they freaking fabulous. Agnes said they were the best I've ever made. She actually, and I'm not kidding, she would even say it out loud if I brought her back here. She said they were comparable to Dreamland on Jug Factory Road in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And whew, I got the big head out of that. Boy, I tell you. That was my appetite. And if you get, I found something out. If you get the whole country, what they call country style slab, and you cut it yourself, you save about $2 a pound, and you get some really good snacks out of it too. Yum. So listen, over the course of the break, a challenge hit the table. Silent R. Lamar is trying to make Monday happen by putting up a $100 challenge. Your chance to double your money. Your 10 becomes 20, 5, 10, 20, 40, etc. Your 50 becomes 100, up to $100. If we can meet the challenge. I'm sorry, Darlene. I hope you hear this. Darlene says, frustrated. I'm having serious streaming problems with both head-on and tune-in. Not sure if it's you or me. I have to keep reconnecting to the sites or hitting play. The Billy Joel song played the longest without interruption. I've lost the stream again. Hopefully some of that is not my pauses, and they can be notoriously long. But the fact of the matter is, if you look on TuneIn for The Horn, okay, with the Horn logo, I think that's connected to the head-on.livestream, and there shouldn't be a problem. The White Rose stream is just down. I thought Ben had it fixed. I was gonna tweet that, yay, it's fixed. But then I thought, hey, let's see what happens in the when we do the program. And no, nobody's getting programming from the White Rose stream. So I'm not seeing anybody else saying that they're getting a lot of buffering or anything, Darlene. Maybe, you know, if you just go to, are you streaming from headon.live? Hoghead says things are running okay, maybe reboot. Have you tried resetting your router? That's what drives me crazy when I call tech support. No, I never would have thought of that. Oof. But I'm sorry. The constant. String of technical adventures. Oh, okay. that's a good one. What's the difference between a garbanzo bean and a chickpea? This is courtesy of Clarity. What's the difference between a garbanzo bean and a chickpea? Donald Trump never had a garbanzo bean on his face. Yeah, kind of got to for that, right? Flavio with a subject line, Comey's reputation. Comey claims he was worried about his reputation, Flavio says. And yet people who want to do the right thing will do the right thing in spite of their reputation. People who want to do the right thing will throw caution and reputation to the four winds and face tear gas, police dogs, batons, bullets, being hit in the head. Like Scott Olson, the Iraq War veteran from Onalaska, Wisconsin, my neck of the woods, who nearly died. and the likelihood they will have a hard time getting a job because of their involvement in protests, civil disobedience, or even the mere exercise of their free speech, like Valerie Plame's husband, Joe Wilson. Or, and this is a deeply disturbing story, and it is a real loss to the community. The story's a day old, and it is the story of David Buckel, B-U-C-K-E-L, 60 years old. He had devoted a substantial portion of his legal career, and a good lawyer he was, to helping out the LGBT community and to helping out environmental groups. Well, he went to Prospect Park in Brooklyn to protest the use of fossil fuels, doused himself, and burned himself to death. He self-immolated as a desperate attempt to alert people to the harms that are being done to this planet by fossil fuels. He wrote to the New York Times, told them, pollution ravages our planet, oozing pollution ravages our planet, oozing inhabitability via air, soil, water, and weather. Most humans on the planet now breathe air made unhealthy by fossil fuels, and many die early deaths as a result. My early death by fossil fuel reflects what we are doing to ourselves. A life of privilege, and this goes to Flavio's point. A life of privilege requires actions to balance the harm caused, and the greater the privilege, the greater the responsibility. For if one does not leave behind a world better for having lived in it, all that remains are selfish ends, sometimes wrapped in family or nation. Now, what had this man done with his life prior to being 60 years old and burning himself to death? Well, among other things, he was the lead lawyer for a case involving, and some of you will recognize the name, Brandon Tina. Brandon Tina was a transgender teen. Because of the work he did, because of the work Buckel did, it was found that police failed to protect him. After he was brutally raped, as the story from Newsweek terms it. I don't know of any other kind of rape that... We can probably stop hanging brutally in front of raped. And then Brandon Tina was later murdered in Nebraska. It was the source material for the film Boys Don't Cry. He was also the marriage project director and senior counsel at Lambda Legal. Lambda Legal said his death is a loss for the entire movement for social justice. The news of David's death is heartbreaking, they said. We've lost a movement leader, a colleague, and a friend. We will honor his life by continuing his fight for a better world. David was an indefatigable attorney and advocate and also a dedicated and loving friend to so many. He will be remembered for his kindness, devotion, and vision for justice. Contrast him with Jim Comey. Can you say comfortably,
How do you form a personal judgment on something like that? Given the things that he had devoted his life to, and necessarily the horrors that went along with that, the first impulse is to say, well, you know, he must have. Because what we do not understand, we ascribe to madness. Well, he must have been mentally ill to set himself on fire and die that way. Which is, of course, the same thing we say. Well, you know, clearly Nicholas Cruz had to be mentally ill when he killed 17 people at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. But the fact of the matter is, David Buckle chose to make a shocking and public statement about where he sees the world going right now. And frankly, his statements in the letter that he sent to media outlets are true. Most humans on the planet now breathe air made unhealthy by fossil fuels, and many die early deaths as a result. We know that the hard way in Appalachia. Yeah, we breathe the particulates from coal-fired power plants, but if you happen to live near mountaintop removal communities, you're breathing things that are even more dangerous. Toxins a hundredth the diameter of a human hair that go in and wreck the human body, all from a determination to make a profit by scraping away 6-inch thick layers of coal exposed by massive amounts of blasting. But Flavio said people who want to do the right thing will throw caution and reputation to the four winds and face a long, long, long list. Well, that's apparently what David Buckle did. And after having done massive amounts of good for people who he probably couldn't even begin to number, on the other hand, we get stories about from James Comey about drinking Pinot Noir out of a coffee cup on an airplane after having been fired, and thinking about how much he loves his country. Oh. Well, he didn't love his country enough to put out the whole story. He didn't love his country enough to say, well, yes, it's true, the Clinton administration is under investigation for some bullshit claims about emails and servers. Ah, yeah, but at the same time, you know, the Trump administration or the Trump campaign is under investigation for some really skeevy behavior with the Russians. Nope, couldn't do that. Sorry. Just couldn't do that. But, oh well. Meanwhile, let's... I mentioned something over... I think it was on Friday in the course of the random flow of the conversation. A young woman on Twitter, of course, named Brenna Spencer, who has recently graduated from college somehow, who posted a photo of herself in a pair of extremely tight pants, jeans, and shoved a semi-automatic pistol down the front of them, and then held her shirt up and had a picture taken of her with a pistol in her pants. This has now become a thing. On the one hand, she was relentlessly mocked by people with rifles stuffed down their pants, chihuahuas, any number of objects. It was funny. But now, of course, she is a heroine. We don't use that word anymore, do we? She is a hero of the Second Amendment crowd. And she's got other women now posting photos on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, what have you, of their pistols shoved into their pants. Although unlike young Brenna, some of the women at least have had the common sense to go out and purchase a holster. You may recall this all began when Ava Braun Barbie, Tommy Lauren, did a pitch for sticking a gun in your pants on Instagram. Stupid runs around this country before intelligent even has thought about not putting its shoes on or just even getting out of bed. And so here's Brenna Spencer being interviewed by one of the goobers from the Rifle Association, America's wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization. Talking to Greg Stinkfield, I think is his name. Something like that. All about why she likes to have people look at her and say, is that a gun in your pants, or are you just happy to see me? Notice the leading question she has to have before she can give the answer that the NRA wants her to give.
I think what you did is actually great because it starts a conversation and it actually forces the left to face all of these issues and move through with a conversation about it. Was that your thoughts, too?
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to show that you are your first line of defense, especially on a college campus where you cannot have a weapon. And, you know, walking as a female, walking around campus, especially during night classes, that is kind of terrifying. So me having the responsibility that I am my first line of defense, I should be able, my constitutional rights should not stop at a college campus.
Oh, well, okay. The only problem is nobody stopped her college rights at a college on a college campus. Even Fat Dad Tony Scalia agreed that it is perfectly constitutionally permissible to impose regulations on the keeping and the carrying and the possessing of firearms under the Second Amendment, and that matters. But now I guess it, you know, for you it was a million years ago. Paris Hilton, remember Paris Hilton? Remember when you couldn't get away from Paris Hilton in the media? Well, remember she started this craze for carrying very small dogs in really big gaudy purses and right? Well, I guess we're going to have a new craze now. In the instantaneous world of social media, of women sticking firearms in their pants because freedom. And of course, when it's a nice. You know what I mean? Okay, let's run over and check in with Jim. Haven't heard from Jim in a while. Hey, Jim.
Oh, geez, Bob. How you doing?
Oh, geez, Jim. It's a great day to be a West Virginian, you know?
I could have gone all day on that hearing the stories about that stupid twit that you just mentioned.
Oh, who? Brenna Spencer?
Oh, God.
Or Tommy Lauren, or any of the other women sticking guns in their pants.
I don't know. I mean, God knows. I saw one of Ivanka Trump standing on an airplane fuselage with a gun in her hand and her ass hanging out. I mean...
No. That was melanoma.
Well, whatever her name was, I don't give a shit. They're all the same to me. They're all the same breed of white trash. And I despise all those bastards. And it just really angers me. It really is. I'm in an angry mood tonight. That son of a bitch, first, that gentleman who committed suicide, I don't know how to react to that. I am simply floored by that. And his loss is just very, very great to me. And I know what it's like to be depressed and on the verge of simply putting a gun to my head and blowing my brains out. But I'm saying, no, just can't quite do it. Don't want to go the way Adolf did. I have to do it another way. But that's just me talking right now because I'm just really speaking from the heat of passion. And that son of a bitch, that FBI asshole on Stephanopoulos, who looked like he had just come off a big drunk with no tie in a suit, pissing the moan about, I got involved in politics with Trump when he had gotten involved with Hillary Clinton by publishing or doing that stuff with all her emails that probably sabotaged what little chance she had of being elected.
Well, yeah, you're right. You're right there with me. I mean, But he is what he is, and I guess the most, well, it's not shocking because we're talking about the pundits and panjandrums of the for-profit media, but there's a lot of people out there do-Jesusing and hosannaing, you know, James Comey, man of principle.
But going over the predicate, the FBI should not be involved in politics. Well, he just right around and starts one, and finishes up with the other, and is all pissing and moaning because he got his nuts caught in a ringer on this last one. I wish they could put that son of a bitch in jail.
Well, I don't know that he's done anything overtly criminal, Jim. But you know, at the very least, he's a screw up. And the ex post facto explanations for why he didn't. Well, you know, if it was right before the election, and if I'd said anything about the Trump campaign being under investigation, they would have said I was putting my thumb on the scales for Hillary Clinton. Well, what in the hell do you think we think you were doing with your stupid course July 5th and October 26th? I mean, for Christ's sakes, right, Jim?
Yes, sir, indeed. That man, to me, is an embarrassment to the civil service and the federal service, as supposedly the finest law enforcement people we have in the world, and it ain't so.
No.
When I saw him on Stephanopoulos, I thought to myself, buddy, you've been on a bender, because I've been on enough benders in my life to tell you what it's like. And there he was, sitting there, sprawled out in the chair, couldn't even sit properly, and tried to say, well, I don't know, I could have done this, oh, I could have done that, and all these woulda, coulda, shoulda. Could you believe it when you heard it?
You know what this boils down to, Jim? This is, again, these conversations would not be happening if he didn't have a book to hustle, okay? So,
no shit.
Well, so what this boils down to is putting commerce above the health of the body politic.
Well, Bob, that's just the way of everything today. Everything is based upon, is predicated upon how much can I get out of it and then leave whatever ruins are behind me. And without any thought of the impact that what their short-term efforts of greed will have cost this country. Because I hold that man partially responsible for Trump being where he is. I do. When I heard that, and I just thought about it, and I said, you son of a bitch. You you turncoat. And I don't think I've ever hated anybody as much as I have in that particular moment when I heard him get up there and piss and moan. To tell you the truth, if I had my Glock, I would have shot him on the spot.
Well, we shouldn't be saying things like that, but...
Well, I would have. I mean, that's the way I felt immediately. We all have these feelings. We don't mean them, but we have them. I've had it. It's not been good for me. My Rufus is sick. He lost 5 teeth.
I know. That's awful.
And he's got a thyroid problem, and I'm trying to keep him alive. And so it's just not a good time for me. But I am just, you're just thoroughly, thoroughly disaffected and disconnected by a number of things. And I won't bother or burden the listeners of this program with my own situation. I think the only time you ever heard me doing this, when it has to do with him.
Yeah.
Or my cat. I keep my own stuff to myself mainly. I try to. But I will say this. I did hear something that was very inspiring to me, and I shared it with you on an email. And you know Charles Carell Boulle and the song that he did, Stronger Together, mm-hmm. Stronger, Stronger Together,
yeah,
with the three other artists. Now, that is something that if it could be played in honor of that man who burned himself to death, and I don't think Boulle would buy. Besides, you can drop it down on iTunes. It's in the public domain. And it's a damn good song. And when you see the visual behind it, they did that thing in 3 hours. And it starts with Harvey Milk, San Francisco, Martin Luther King. And it can make you almost weep. At least for those days, and we see those people, that they are still with us, they will never be forgotten. And I wish you'd play it.
Well, I don't have it handy, Jim. And
it's right there. You can pull it up when you get a chance. Maybe between now, you can put it on the loy. I just ask you to play it respectfully. I'm not trying to demand you play anything.
I understand. I mean, there's
have you heard it?
I know I have, but it has it not in a while. But I know that I have.
I think it's something you need to play right now. Well, I mean, not right now. I think it's something you need to pull up, and it just goes stronger, stronger together. Not for Hillary Clinton's sake, but the one that Boulle and three other artists did. In Long Beach, in his own private studio. And by the way, I'm going to trumpet for Boulle. He has a lot to say. I know he's maybe to a lot of other people, but I hear a lot of good things from him. I don't know if you ever listen to him, but I would suggest to the members of the Horn audience, he comes on late, but he's a worthy person to listen to.
I'm not familiar with, but
Bob, just pull him up when you get a chance, and just go to Boulle. Go to really R-E-A-L-L-Y Carell K-A-R-E-L, and just pull him up and see if you can just go through your tubes and stronger, stronger together. He has three people there, and the song was really made in June. In November, right before the election. And it's something that has touched my heart the way nothing else that I have heard in a long time. Because it brings back the times when I was so happy when Harvey Milk was elected to the Board of Supervisors, and how I thought something had begun to turn, and he and Marconi was, of course, taken to get out by Dan White. But it showed what people together can do and what they have and what they still can do. And we cannot let these people go unremembered and their lives having lived in vain or the causes for which they fought.
Well, I appreciate it, Jim. I thank
you. Most of the time, I get on here and act like an idiot, and you hear it, and I do it. And I do it on purpose.
No, we just carry on. We have our fun, and sometimes it's not so fun.
Yeah, it is, and I enjoy that. But you know, this is not that time for me. And of course, when I heard that thing about that stupid woman, and then the Trump women, and the Mae West thing about a pistol in your pocket. And that idiot from the National Rifle Association, or whatever you want to call them, tried to say, "Oh, this is a disclosure for our real openings to your feelings." And then before that, you mentioned this poor guy burned himself to death. And I remember very well the one of his clients. They did a whole documentary on it.
Well, Hillary Swank was in Boys Don't Cry, and
right.
won an Academy Award, I believe.
I think she did, and that was a rather strange thing, but I thought it strange at the time, but still thought to myself, well, this is horrible. So that girl was murdered, or that young man who she wished to be was murdered, and then I started thinking about the young man who was impaled against a barbed wire fence. And I've dealt with this kind of crap all of my life, this kind of discrimination, and having to hide it, and having, you know, to, you know, try to be something I am not. And I'm so sick and tired of it, have been sick and tired of it, and I just don't care anymore. But I really have a great deal of respect and admiration for a lot of the people who've had the courage to come out of the closet, to be what they are, and to express things that have happened in their lives that may offend other people who are straight. And you, let's face it, there are. You've got people who listen to this program who are straight who don't like what I say. I know it. And I don't get the accolades from them, and I don't think the accolades from them. But they're going to have to realize that, you know, if you are truly in the LGBT side, you got to at least give a little side and not try to say, well, secretly, well, I'm glad I'm not like that, because there are people who do. And some of the people who are maybe the angriest of my whole life are some of the people who are pretending that they are on your side when you know in reality they are not.
False friends.
Sir?
False friends.
Yes, exactly. And they do it for whatever, something to make him look cool or to make him look like, well, I'm really with it and I'm really a progressive, when they are not. But nonetheless, about that, that's fine. I'm so sorry this man took himself to that point. Oh, dear God, I didn't know how to react to that when you mentioned that he had burned himself to death. Good God, I remember that in Vietnam. Jesus.
Well, that's the first thing that comes to mind. I mean, the Buddhist monk protesting Vietnamese government's oppression of Buddhists.
That's just false things all over me.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I glad you had a good week and a good al fresco. Whatever you did with your ribs, and it's always good to hear about what you're doing. Be glad you can do it, son, because one day you're going to get to the point where you might not have those motor skills.
Well, I'm trying to forestall that day.
Well, you should do that. That's a good thing to do.
Agnes and I are working on taking advantage of what was supposed to be finally the arrival of good weather. And took a real nice hike last week and got another one planned for this week. And just get out and be active and do a little bit. And that's all you can do, right?
Well, the only other thing I can say other than I hope you try to find that song between your menu for Malloy. And I hope he's okay. I mean, he's sick an awful lot lately.
Oh, he's got some sort of, you know, sinus infection or something like that at the moment. Well, you know, it's one of those, you know, it's one of those no good deed goes unpunished. You know, something always happens when you come back from vacation.
Well, good. But nonetheless, between now and that time, I hope you try to find that song and play it. It isn't copyrighted. Carell would love to hear you play it. And I hope that you can have a good program in the rest of the time that you have left. I'm going to get off here because if I say any more, I'm going to probably offend somebody. And right now, I've got a friend to take care of here.
All right. I hope Rufus keeps getting better. That can't be easy, losing those teeth.
No, it can't. It's dreadful. Thank you.
All right. Take care, Jim. Bye now. It's our buddy Jim. Yeah, Rufus. Jim told me Rufus had 5 teeth cut out last week, and oof. And that was all in the context of my little party with dental misery. So I sympathize completely. And yeah, really. By the way, thanks to Robert in Australia for letting me know that the stream's coming in okay down there. Again, Ben's going to be really frustrated because he rebuilt the entire streaming programming, whatever, who's this thingy, beyond my ability to comprehend, and something's still sideways. So he'll be thrilled to know. I've already sent him a message saying, you know, it won't work. But the other side of that is that HeadOn.live does. And it's always wise to go from one to the other. If you can't find one, you'll get it on the other. I just saw a note on the Horn's Facebook page saying, I haven't heard anything since last Monday. and I hate that. I hate that. But anyway, that's what that is. There were other things that happened over the course of the weekend. Horrifying things that deserve mention in these waning. By the way, speaking of waning moments of the program, Silent R. Lamar has $100 on the table as a challenge, hoping that that he'll get to double other people's money. And if he can do that, we'll be even with fundraising for this evening and just move happily forward. So hopefully that challenge will not be abandoned or ignored. Thank you very kindly, Silent R. Lamar, for making the challenge. I really, really appreciate it. No, I said, since we're talking about morons this evening, let's take a minute to discuss one Charlie Kirk. Ever heard of him? I'm not particular. I'm vaguely familiar with him. He is the founder of something called Turning Point USA, and they just TPUSA, you know, toilet paper the USA, like they want to roll our whatever. But they're a group of right. Well, they're maggots mostly. Morons are governing America, Trumpansy scum. And they keep a list. They're kind of working over onto, what's his name, Horowitz's turf. They're trying to intimidate professors into some sort of ideological pigeonhole whereby only right-wing crap will be heard on out of the mouths of teachers. And so as an act of this ongoing propensity of maggots and white wingers and whatnot to jump up on the cross and get nailing, Charlie Kirk has driven one. He's claiming he's being persecuted by the Broward County Public Schools, Broward County, Florida. Mm-hmm. Charlie Kirk says that he's being He's being muzzled. His free speech rights are being impinged upon, because, well, the way they frame it is that Charlie Kirk was invited to speak at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School as an advocate for guns and the Broward County School Public Schools. Yeah, the Broward County Public Schools doesn't want anybody to talk about how good guns are in America and how we love guns and guns is freedom and stuff. And, ooh, my hand, the nail just went through it. He said, he claimed that he had accepted an invitation from two students at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School to speak at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, but now they won't let him. World's smallest violin. Here's the problem. If you're a student at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, you can't just say, hey, I want some gun humper to come down here and talk about how much he loves humping guns. And then the school just says, well, if you said you want it, then I guess we got to do it. The Broward County Public Schools actually have a policy as relating to who speaks at the schools. And, you know, again, that is a legitimate function of the school board. Right? Because otherwise you'd just have chaos. Every other day, some kid would be, you know what, I want somebody to come in here. I mean, I'm not being an asshole. Okay, kind of a little bit. You know, I want somebody to come in here and talk about how awesome crystal meth is. Well, okay, I guess we gotta let them. Because Charlie Kirk, for all of his feigned oppression, was never invited by the Broward County Public Schools or by Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. He just wants to go down there and wave the and wave the NRA's and TPUSA's bloody shirt. I was even invited by the sister of one of the people who got killed there to come and talk about how cool guns are and how great guns are, and now they won't let me. Help, help, I'm being repressed. Yeah. Well, Kathleen Brennan at the Broward Schools, Broward Public Schools, said, quote, non-school-sponsored, student-initiated, guest speaker assemblies meetings are not permitted to take place on campus. The Orlando Sun-Sentinel had reported that Charlie Kirk was invited by a couple of little right-wing students there at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. And one of the students, Kyle Kashev, who has become the cause celeb of the right wing of the gun humpers, said, we'll meet off campus if we have to. Well, cool. Go do that. Welcome to the First Amendment. Enjoy. Knock yourselves out. Try not to shoot each other. But no, he's having his the poor little snowflake is all persecuted and stuff because he can't hump, he can't give his gun hump and talk on the scene of a, you know, mass murder. Oh, dear. Mike in Cascadia says, I think he even has a degree per Wikipedia. According to Kirk, he dreamed of attending the United States Military Academy in West Point, but his application was rejected. According to the New Yorker, Kirk said the slot he considered his went to a far less qualified candidate of a different gender and a different persuasion whose test scores he claimed he knew. Oh, this kid's been climbing up on the cross for a while. He later said he was being sarcastic when he made the comment. Well, yeah, in other words, when he was caught lying. He was accepted to Baylor University, the Baptist Notre Dame, but then went on to enroll in general education classes at Harper College in Palatine, Illinois, and founded Turning Point USA to monitor and hopefully silence college professors who are teaching things that he apparently doesn't agree with. Jeez. Thank you very kindly, Ralphs, for responding to Silent R. Lamar's challenge, and thank you, Mike in Cascadia, for responding. That leaves $50 to go in meeting Silent R. Lamar's challenge, and if it happened in the next 8 minutes, that would be really, really cool. Thank you. Thank you, both of you, very much. And this one, I'm not sure... I'm not sure if this is bad reporting, or if it's my bad attitude. It's a local story, but if a decision like this is being made here, it's probably being made similarly somewhere near you. The headline is one that just makes you say, "Ah, damn it, really?" Mountain Mission announces closure of soup kitchen. Well, that's never a good idea. That's never a good thing, because it's not like there are less hungry people in the Kanawha Valley around Charleston, West Virginia than there are. And so, you know, they're just out of business. There's no hungry people left, so we're going to shut. No. They're having a hard time maintaining funds to keep buying the food with which to make the meals at the soup kitchen. But here's where the problem arises. This past Wednesday, they announced they're closing the soup kitchen this past Friday. And WCHS-TV reports, naming expenses and the drug crisis as reasons for the decision. Okay, keep reading. Donations aren't keeping up with the need. All right. Yep. Okay, not surprising. And the drug crisis. John Roberts, CEO of Mountain Mission, told WCHS-TV, "We can't jeopardize the other services that we provide to the community," meaning that they're stretched thin. Roberts said he thought the kitchen would serve 70 to 80 meals a day, but the facility is currently serving an average of 150 meals daily. Twice as much. And that is more than the organization's budget can handle without additional funding. Here's where the trouble comes in. In all of our other services, and they do have other services, they have a food pantry. They help people with their utility bills, needs during emergency situations. They manage a couple of thrift stores. Doing good work, okay? But here's the part that kind of got me sideways. And again, a quote. In all of our other services, we are helping people interested in improving their lives, but frankly, that's not the clientele we are serving at the soup kitchen. In other words, the addicts don't want to improve their lives, so the impression you're left with there is that a decision has been made that since they don't want to improve their lives, fuck them, they don't need to eat. Or they can eat somewhere else, or they can dumpster dive, or do whatever it is the dirty little junkies do. We have people using drugs in our parking lot, leaving dangerous needles on our property for our employees to pick up, or even worse, for a member of the community to be accidentally exposed to. This comes on the heels of a... hue and cry among a certain segment of society And you know who I'm talking about. The needle exchange program, which is cutting disease transmission, has got to go away because our hardworking police officers saw one of our hardworking police officers saw a needle laying in a parking lot last week. But just that notion that a decision to feed people could be based upon whether or not they're considered upright enough to, you know, for a bowl of soup, that grates. Yeah, you know, everybody else we're helping wants to get better, but these people, they just want the soup. Imagine that. It's one of those moments where you'd kind of like to say, hey, bub, struggle through the early parts of William S. Burroughs' Naked Lunch till you get to the part about the algebra of need. He said, you know, we don't have the training to deal with addicts. We don't have the staff and the know-how to go and pick up used needles and throw them away. We don't have the ability or training to provide the services needed for people struggling with addiction. Just breaks my heart, Roberts said. Yeah, it is heartbreaking, and I don't want to come down too hard, but that just came for me at least. That just came across entirely wrong. Well, they don't want to stop using drugs, and we're just feeding them food. Thank you, Jack, in Shreveport. Thank you very, very kindly indeed for finishing off meeting Silent R. Lamar's challenge. That's huge. That means we're done for the evening and nothing to sweat and no deficit for tomorrow. That's tremendous. And thanks, everybody. This will be the close of the program because I got to stop and turn around and reboot and do 2 hours more of cover the Malloy program. Listen, remember, if you're going to listen to the Malloy program, you don't listen on the Horn stream or the head-on.live stream, or if you're listening on TuneIn, go over to Progressive Voices, please. You listen at Progressive Voices because, well, they need the numbers. We don't count numbers around here, but they need the numbers. So, and by the way, the chat room will remain open. I'll be in there. If you'd like to drop by and hang out during the Malloy program. So, thanks, everybody. Foam Cups wants me to wish his son a good birthday. I hope you have a great birthday, son of Foam Cups. Happy birthday indeed from all of us here at the Horn. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in the program. Thank you to that significantly smaller number of you who help keep the program on the air. Thank you very kindly to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Steve from Georgistan and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people that I know. The men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.